characterizes these last days is departure from truth. I am not impressed, and neither should you be impressed with the TV shows, with the big ministries, with the John Hagees of the world, with the Joel Osteens of the world. I am not impressed. Neither is God. Neither would the Apostle Paul be. We should not be impressed with church steeples. We should look at them and say, when did Babylon get re-erected here in the United States or Australia or wherever you are? These are not signs that things are going good. All those things that you see only thrill the soul. They're soulish. They're characterized by departure from truth. And until you get that settled in your mind, you will not progress. And if you don't see that, what happens is you will fall prey to the ferocious periods which are now present. Began with swerving from the truth, withstanding the truth, and turning your ears away from the truth and embracing myths. And you go to churches today, and what do you get from the pulpits? You get myths from ferocious preachers. And this is the, until we get this settled, that Paul is not talking about politics here. Mm-hmm. He's not talking about Obama. He's not talking about Vladimir Putin. He is talking about Dr. PhD, so-and-so, pastor, reverend, priest, pope, bishop, you name it. This is what Paul's warning us. And if we don't get that, we will not progress. And we have already proven that we've fallen prey to the deception of these last days.
There are a number of ways you can destroy a person. You can take a gun and shoot them, or you can deceive them and take away their aeonian life. You can take away their ability to see the truth, because it has so many layers of curtains and walls and mirrors and like a funhouse and deceptions, and you're not seeing the true picture of Christ. And I've said this many times, Satan can't change what Christ did. He can't take it away. It's there. But he can put the funhouse mirrors up. He can put the steeples up. He can bring the emotions in it, the music and the powerful pastors and the Joel Osteens and the John Hagees. Oh, these men are impressive. What great orators. And by this technique, by the technique by which Janice and Jambres withstood the truth.
Withstood it.
These are the, you read that on Friday. Mm-hmm. Welcome to Monday, by the way, everybody. You mentioned that on Friday, that these Egyptian magicians, they imitated the works of Moses. And that is the work today. It's a work of imitation. And by this means, Satan has kept millions of people from seeing the truth of Paul's gospel.
And one of the things that's characteristic, and we hit on 2 Timothy 3 on Friday, Paul tells us to shun these things. Just after he said having a form of devoutness yet denying its power, Paul doesn't tell us to court or to try to win the system. He tells us to shun it.
Yeah, right, exactly right.
Now, I'm going to say something very, very tough here.
What?
Very tough.
All right,
this
I'm going to try to brace
tough.
Myself.
Now, we have to come clean on this. You cannot embrace the message of the Apostle Paul and be part of a denomination of any kind. You cannot be a churchgoer and embrace Paul.
It would be very rare.
If you can't,
I can't do it ever.
Because the system itself is flawed.
Yes, for sure.
The system itself is a departure from Paul.
I think you're right.
And everything, and this is why Paul tells us to shun this thing, not to embrace it. And he goes on, for of these are those who are slipping into homes and leading into captivity, lead little women heaped with sins, being led by various lusts and gratifications. And here it is, always learning, yet not at any time able to come into a realization of the truth. Always learning.
Yeah. You know, I think of a gateway drug. And again, I'm so interested in how this applies to the religious realm. The religious people are always telling you, oh, you can't drink wine, or you can't smoke a cigarette because that's a gateway drug to harder things. Next thing you know, you'll be shooting up heroin you know, in your bedroom. And yet the religious, the gateway drug to deception is the institution.
Yes.
It's a gateway drug. The entertainments and the system, it's a gateway drug to satanic activity.
Yeah.
And you and I have said there's more satanic activity in the church than in the strip club or at the bar down on Miami Beach.
Yeah,
that's a playground. That's good times on Miami Beach or Las Vegas. All these places that we think are sin city, that's a front. That's almost Satan. That is Satan bringing a diversion.
Yeah.
And we're totally diverted by these. And oddly enough, Christianity are the ones pointing their fingers at these places like Las Vegas, Miami Beach, these so-called centers of sin and lust. And yet the greatest, most horrific lusts are going on in the institutional church. So I got to agree with you on that one.
Well, that's,
you
and
can't
you know what? And
get
I,
it. You
and
can't
I'm,
get it.
And I'm saying this because as a if a doctor does not diagnose a problem, he's guilty of malpractice. But so many people say, well, Dan, I just want the fellowship.
Yeah.
I think Satan's greatest tool, greatest tool, I hear it all the time, is fellowship, a sense of wanting to be loved, and the children. We got to have a place for the kiddies to go. Why have Pharaoh raise your children, though?
Yeah. Why have Nimrod raise your children?
Why have Nimrod raise your children? And you got to get to a point where you realize truth is going to cost you something. Truth costs. If it doesn't cost, it's not truth.
Yeah, that's
true. It costs you something.
Yep. If you're looking, Clyde, this is Clyde Pilkington from page 91 of The Church in Ruins. Paul did not tell Timothy to be faithful and things would be restored. If you are looking for the restoration of the early church, quote unquote, the early church, like the Acts model, everybody wants to build a church according to the Acts model. I don't know why you'd want to do that because the Acts model failed.
It did.
So if they want to build it, they will not come and it'll crash down like it did in that day. If you're looking to restore the early church, you will be continually frustrated and discouraged. These same people that want to go to the institution for entertainment, they have a list, laundry list of complaints, of things that I'm just not getting satisfied. They're getting satisfied maybe emotionally, but they're not. They're empty spiritually. They're not getting meat and
you, that's why they have to pack you down with programs so you can
you can
not realize how little you're actually getting.
Programs, exactly. Oh my gosh. I had a, when I wrote How to Quit Church Without Quitting God, I got a pamphlet from one of the local churches and they were just like, they bragged in like 33 programs for people to get into, you know. Moms for homeschoolers, dads, motorcycle fellowship, breakfast club, all these crazy things to keep you from thinking, really.
Exactly.
It has every earmark of a cult, the modern Christian church. And to go on in the book here, all that faith can desire is that a remnant, this is Clyde from The Church in Ruins, all that faith can desire is that a remnant of faithful men will continue to come out and stand apart. That's what Paul says to shun. And come out, stand apart from the world's religious system, and in completeness and simplicity be who and what they are in Christ.
There you go.
Completeness and simplicity.
In reality, you said completeness and simplicity of who you are in Christ.
Yeah.
You escape to the system because you don't realize the fullness that's in Christ. Church is not proof of spirituality.
No.
It's proof of lack of it. It's not a worship of God. It's a worship of your feelings. It's praising your praise and worshiping your worshiping, adoring your adoration.
Yeah, and having faith in your faith.
It's crazy. When you come and you have to readjust the scriptures to make it look like what you see on your on the corner of your street this Sunday morning. None of it looked like that. It never looked like that.
Right.
Paul would say, what the hell is that thing? Oh, that's a steeple, Paul. What the hell you got
that
for?
Can you imagine bringing St. Paul back, resurrecting him from the
Paul
dead?
Paul would say, what is it?
And then his name is on it. His name is on it, St. Paul Catholic Church.
And then
he looked
at the thing and he goes, wait a minute, Pastor who? What the hell is that?
You remember Billy Joel's album, Glass Houses? It shows Billy Joel ready to throw a rock into a house. That's what Paul would be doing.
Paul would be saying, wait a minute, is this a church or a cult? Why is everyone sitting in pews looking at one man every Sunday? Where did this role of pastor come from? What is this nonsense? You guys come once a week to watch an entertainer? He's doing all the thinking for you? What's wrong with you people?
Yeah, that's what he would say. Yeah,
what's wrong with you?
He'd be shocked. And again, to see his name on it. St. Paul Catholic Church.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Can you imagine?
Oh, he'd go nuts, man. Yeah. This list in 2 Timothy 3 about the ferocious periods, it does get worse. But a lot of people wouldn't think it would get worse because we're talking about calumniators, stubborn appearance, ungrateful, and malign. And yet we get to this part, having a form of devoutness yet denying its power in verse 5. Having a form of devoutness.
Whoa.
You know, that's the worst. That's the worst. Because the most deceiving of all deceptions is that form. You know, and I've heard A. E. Nock teach that the other religions, Buddhism and Hinduism, they're so far from the truth that they're not very deceptive and they're not very dangerous. Then when you get to Islam, the second largest religion in the world, soon to become the first,
yeah,
trying to, it's close to the truth. They recognize the first five books of Moses, don't they?
Right, yep.
And then you get to Christianity, and it's called a ferocious, and this is a parallel passage, I think. It's called a monstrous in the Daniel chapter 7. It's the most ferocious of all the religions, and it's the most deceptive because it has the form of...
And that ferociousism also has to do with its militant stance. You know, people talk about Islam.
Yeah.
But what do we have? We wrap Christianity, well, we say we. Americans wrap Christianity in the American flag. And they use M16s to promote it.
God,
and
you mean God's not an American?
And predator drones. And killing children overseas to preserve their worshiping freedoms. That's how ferocious it is. Mm. Our wars in America are wrapped in the cross. The flag is wrapped in a cross.
Mm-hmm.
Not only do we love eternal conscious torment in American Christianity, and not, you know, I'm saying American, Christian nations in general,
mm-hmm.
but it's backed by military force.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm on Facebook. I know you're not. And one of the most disheartening things on Facebook is to see those who profess Paul's message, constantly promoting pictures of soldiers with rifles and guns saying they're protecting our freedoms, as if an M16 and the cross of Christ, as if can you imagine Paul saying, Paul, a soldier preserved your freedoms? He'd say, what?
Yeah.
I don't want anyone dying for me.
We killed to preserve your freedom to worship God, Paul.
Paul would say, I'm in prison. I am in prison, sir. Paul's message thrives under any political circumstance. We do not need government action for our faith.
No.
We don't need it. That's why Paul tells us to submit in Romans 13. We don't go to war. Christian believers in Paul's, I notice I keep reverting to this word Christian.
Yeah, I know it. Yeah.
But those of us who embrace the truth regarding Paul's message should never promote political action for it.
Right.
There's no connection. We don't need it. We don't need it. My brother, my fellow, we know believers in Australia who listen to this program. Is he less exceptional because he doesn't have an American flag in his front yard? No, we are closer to him. And I would never want to see a military force kill him in the name of my Christianity. Mm. I'm closer to him. I have a closer bond to him than any political party.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you say ferocious, it's the religious wrapped in, it's not only the thought, it's the religion, the beliefs, eternal conscious torment, the love of violence and all this other stuff. That's everything we're not. Christians love their enemies. So how can you call it a Christian nation?
They're supposed to love their enemies.
If it's because we live in ferocious periods.
Ferocious periods, religiously ferocious, politically ferocious, militarily. And we're going to see this develop as the United States loses its sovereignty, which it's going to, and there's a one-world government that will be backed by the West, and it will be wrapped in the cross and the flag, some flag.
Yes.
Some kind of flag.
Kind
it's
going to
be Christianized, and it's going to be military, and it's going to force your worship on you. And the Crusaders did the same thing. You go back to my Catholic school. When I went to high school, we were the Central Catholic Crusaders.
Yeah.
And before the football games, we had a guy dressed as one of the Crusaders march out with a lance. A lance.
Yep.
We're going to, if you don't agree with us, we're going to run you through. This lance is going to go in you front and back, and we're going to kill you in the name of our God.
Yes.
And that's not what we're about.
The founders of our country, they call it a Christian nation, killed other people of other denominations. The Puritans hung Quakers. They killed each other, the Puritans. And to associate the evangel of grace, the message of conciliation, with a violent religion is what we would call almost blasphemous. They're not the same.
Folks, we are not a part of this world in any sense.
We're the outcalled.
We are the outcalled. That's what church means. Called. That's what the true word means. Ecclesia, it's outcalled. We're being called out of the world. Paul said that I was crucified to the world. The world was crucified to me. In other words, I don't care anything about them. They don't care anything about me. We're marching to the beat of a message of grace and peace. You are so out of step here. That's why you're uncomfortable. That's why you might be having a bad day, because you're surrounded by the enemy. It's as close to you as your hand is to your face. But God's closer. Greater is He who is in you than he who is in the world.